Radio at its best. Mix 93.8 FM.
Success begins in the 6 inches between your ears. If you want more money, more time, more happiness, and more love in your life, then listen to The Success Show with Chris and Suzanne Styles every Tuesday night at 7:15.
So we're back. It's Chris and Suzanne Styles on Mix 93.8 FM on The Success Show.
Indeed, and what a week it has been. And of course, we have Millionaire Mind Intensive coming up.
Very soon.
Yeah, that's always an event which you have to attend. Notice not should attend, have to attend, because what T. Harv Eker, Doug Nelson, and the Success Resources crew teach you at Millionaire Mind Intensive is just mind-blowing. That information will give you transformational change, not transactional change, and that's why you have to be there.
Well, we've got a great show lined up for you this week, and I know I say that every week, but in studio we have Hank and Debbie from Van Laugh from the PSA Group. And note, joint surnames, they are not brother and sister, they are husband and wife in studio with us tonight. They're going to be sharing a bit of their story, the fact that they were in the UK for many years, came back to South Africa, and what they're doing as entrepreneurs in the South African landscape.
Absolutely. Tonight is going to be about couples in business, and when we actually get down to the business of business in terms of what they do, it's going to be the world of procurement. Now, for any of you who might be sitting there scratching your head thinking, what on earth is the world of procurement? Well, it's actually a world which I used to flirt with and move in when I was still in the world of banking, and it is really all about buying, but there is so much more to it. As you can imagine, the size of the industry and the amount of responsibility procurement carries, given the fact that you are buying. And if you just think of massive multinational organizations, you now understand why they have procurement divisions or departments with sometimes hundreds of people that are managing and controlling it. So we have two procurement specialists in studio with us tonight, Hank and Debbie Van Laar. Their company is called the PSA Group. And if you want to go and have a look at what they do, go to psagroup.co.za.
Now, before we get there tonight, of course, if you'd like to send us an SMS, you can SMS us on 41348. SMSs are charged at R1.50, or you can send us a tweet on @mix938FM.
Now, before we get into the blood and guts and the meat of the show, I'm sitting here smiling, and the reason I'm smiling is because we have a wonderful guest in studio with us tonight whose name is Ashley. And Ashley is actually with ETV, and he and his crew are actually covering Suzanne's story. And there's on ETV there's something called Against All Odds, a series about people who have really stepped up, and no matter what life and the world has thrown at them, they've been able to keep it together. And they have persisted, and as a result of their persistence, they have won. So, Ashley, welcome into studio with us tonight. Lovely to have you here. And as you listen to our show tonight, know that that's actually being recorded for ETV. And again, great vote of thanks to Mix FM Management for allowing this.
For sure. Now, usually we try to, well, not we try to, we actually read from Harv Eker's Millionaire Mind Cards, but tonight we've actually decided to take a couple of declarations out, the little book of declarations for African entrepreneurs. So I'm going to be first, and I'm going to pop it over to Chris. He's going to read another declaration. It says here, I can become financially literate. Rich people are rich because they made the time to study and understand money, wealth, success, and business. So I say yes to becoming financially literate. So just think about it. Here's a little exercise for you. We're yet to meet or interview a rich person who is not financially literate and who doesn't take time and an active interest in money, finance, and how the machinations of that work. Again, it's all about learning. Get your hands on quality books which will teach you about money, investing, the stock market, property, and different wealth creation vehicles. So I'm going to hand over to Chris, so he's going to get to play with the book and just open it somewhere and read a declaration to you. But think about that. Being literate in so many ways, you have to understand money and what money can do for you. Because if you don't know how to look after money, money won't flow to you. It'll flow away from you.
Absolutely, very true. And the next declaration is, I can see myself as rich and successful. Whatever you see and believe in your mind will happen to you in the physical world. I say yes to seeing myself as rich and successful. Now, how powerful is that? What are you saying yes to? Are you saying yes to poverty consciousness? Are you saying yes to a mediocre life? Are you settling at every time? Are you saying yes to what you actually don't want because you're too scared of really going after what you do want? What is it that you are saying yes to? And what is this telling you about the way you're approaching life? Now, the thing about rich and successful people, and that's why we love reading from this little book of declarations for African entrepreneurs, is because we are encouraging you to see yourself as rich and successful. If you can't see yourself as rich and successful, well, you can never become. And that takes us into the exercise, which as within, so without, as above, so below. Your external riches will always mirror your internal money blueprint. Grow your money blueprint for the rest of your life. Become fiscally aware and financially savvy. Study what the richest people in the world do and apply their learnings to your life. Do you do that? If you want to become rich, are you reading books written by massively rich people? Or are you just basically living in a fool's paradise saying, oh, I'm going to be rich, but you're doing nothing about increasing your knowledge and actually learning what people did? Because the thing is, just remember, rich and successful people become rich and successful not by doing things in a certain, not by doing certain things, but rather by doing things in a certain way. So tonight we encourage you to get yourself a rich money mentor, put great effort into building a powerful relationship with money. You'll be so glad you did.
And what a thing that we both chose money as declarations, literally by just picking up the book, because the book has got so many tips in there for you, so many declarations and exercises, which cover everything around being an entrepreneur, not just money.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, so who goes first? Who's going to start chatting to Debbie and Hank? What a wonderful opportunity it is to bring them both into studio tonight, because procurement is something that small business also needs to start getting an understanding for. It isn't only the domain of the big corporates, and that is one of the questions we're going to be putting to Debbie and Hank tonight. And it's just, we love working with and getting to know couples that are in business together, because it is so interesting to see that it can be done. And that working together and being together can give you a greater understanding of not only the business, but your relationship.
Well, very true. And the thing is, when we meet and work with couples in business, there are really two words that come into play, make and break. And this is a couple who are actually making their collective success. There are also other couples who are busy breaking their collective success. And it's just quite sad to see what happens when a couple are working in the same business and actually they're not working towards the same cause, and ultimately really it's the equivalent of a low-scale civil war within the business. In fact, it's not only that, it's just the fact that the entire business and everything about it, the environment, the energy becomes toxic. And because we feel this energy as to all the other people that work in that environment, guess what? It just becomes a toxic business and it goes from bad to worse. So tonight, if you are a couple in business, or if you know of couples in business, it's really going to be a crackerjack show, because we're not going to pull any punches. We're going to say it the way it is. And as a couple, firstly, you need to decide, are you going to make it together or are you going to break it together? Because if you're going to break it together, best just get out of each other's lives and go and do something completely different. If you are going to make it together, well, this show is the one for you, and we're going to share some great pearls of wisdom with you tonight. Now, into the meat of the show. Debbie, Hank van Laar, welcome. The PSA Group, the founders, the starters, lovely to have you in studio with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks, Chris and Suzanne. Awesome to be here.
Now, Debbie, how did it all start? Let's wind the clock back to the story. Because you and Hank have both been in the world of procurement. You both qualified in the world of procurement. You both have your honors in procurement. And then you also have a family. You've got two marvelous little kids. And so it's a juggling act. But let's go right back to when the two of you met and how did your lives and careers evolve in the world of procurement? What happened? I know you left the shores of South Africa. Why? What brought you back? And where has all of this taken you to where you are right now?
Goodness, that's a lot of questions. We met at university. We were very, very fortunate. University of Natal at that time were, as far as I'm aware, the only university to offer procurement, or what they called purchasing and supply chain management, as a third year subject in your Bachelor of Commerce. So Hank was a couple of years ahead of me, and he broke the ground, as you would say, and I followed. And we both went on to do our honors and managed to get some fantastic jobs. I was very, very fortunate. I joined the team of Unilever in Durban, who truly understood what supply chain and what procurement could do to the business. I think Hank and I must have been together for about 2 years when we decided to go overseas. It was what you did at the time, young, in your 20s, prior kids, prior marriage, go overseas for a year.
Where is overseas?
We went initially to Holland. We were there for about a month. And my family have come from the UK, and I said, no, that's where I wanted to go. And Hank was very, very kindly followed me there. And we went for a year.
I love that. I don't think you had much of a choice.
No, I don't think so.
So yeah. Right, Chris. So right.
Yeah, we went for a year. We stayed 8.
Wow.
Yes, we absolutely loved it. The learning, the people, the experiences. It was just something out of this world. And it gave us a grounding in our business that we are very, very grateful for.
So just to interject there, you talk about the learning. So, Hank, I'm going to ask you to step in there, because I know that when we watched you speaking last week, you spoke about the difference between, or in fact the chasm between supply chain management procurement in South Africa and what you experienced when you went to the UK. Just elaborate a little bit on the fact that there was so much more to learn on that side of the world.
Absolutely, Suzanne. You know, it was quite an eye-opener arriving there, thinking we were the bee's knees. We had these honours degrees. We'd worked in South Africa. And when we got there, we just found the calibre of the people that we were dealing with and what they were doing in procurement over in the UK and in Europe was worlds apart. And we actually didn't know what we thought we knew. So we embarked on this massive journey of learning and having to almost reschool ourselves for a period of 3 or 4 years until we really got to grips with what they were doing in the UK. And very happily, I can report and say we got to the point where we understood it probably better than what they did.
Wow. That's quite a statement. Now, one of the things that I picked up on as well when you were speaking last week in terms of that was the thing that you found the hardest to come to terms with when you were there is this ethos there that it's really all about them individually in the jobs. Mm. And unlike the sort of more mentoring spirit in South Africa, it was kind of like you either do it for yourself or you ain't doing it, sink or swim stuff.
Absolutely. It was so sink or swim. So I managed to land myself a job in the UK with a big consulting firm, and where I'd been expecting that they would mentor, provide insight and support, it really was sink or swim. And it certainly took a while before I got to the point of saying, well, best I do something about this. And, you know, besides really having to get to grips with the material, what I also decided at that point and what Debbie decided is we would help people however we could so that they didn't have to go through that same process.
Now, Hank, when you were stepping up to the plate, so as to say, and it suddenly became all apparent to you how little you knew, what were the thoughts and the emotions that were washing through you at that moment?
Well, I was I was very concerned that, you know, I'd lose my job. I think that was the first and foremost. We'd arrived in the UK with a suitcase each and nothing else. So, and we had nobody to fall back on. So literally we had to make a success of being in the UK. So work was all important. We worked huge hours to really get to grips with the subject matter. I think once I understood what it was that I was missing, it was quite easy then to try and understand and put in place the measures that were required to be able to really become quite good at what we were doing.
Now, that's amazing. Now, Debbie, just over to you, because before you got married and before you had kids, I mean, you started working there. You guys weren't working together then. You weren't in the same businesses or same companies.
No, not at all.
So you were on a completely different learning curve at different companies at the same time?
Completely. Hank got to work in the city. I had to work out of the city. Yeah, it was completely different trajectories at the time.
Wow.
Now, just to bring you back to where you are today, you are now the proud owners of a very, very successful procurement company, PSA Group. And again, I refer you to the website, psagroup.co.za. But at some stage, you had to start PSA Group. So now we've had a bit of an insight into the fact that you shifted across the pond and started in the UK and realized, shock and horror, you were very, very small fish in a very, very big and complex pond, way more complex and intricate and I would almost go so far as to say sophisticated than what South Africa was. And you learned a whole bunch of stuff, and then you decided to come back. Now, that intrigues me. Why? Hank?
Chris, yeah, absolutely. I've always wanted to run my own business. Since I could walk, I had this vision that I would be running a business. So although I was working for the most amazing blue chips internationally, I knew that this isn't actually what I wanted. So Debs and I were actually on holiday in Venice, and I said to her one morning, right, now's the time. We're going to set up this company. And we came up with names for the PSA Group, which was actually the purchasing support agency, and the whole intention was to take the learnings around strategic sourcing, the learnings around mentoring of people, and actually upskilling procurement people in South Africa.
Now, Debbie, when you talk about and going to Venice, goodness me, so it might have been a romantic notion. Nothing romantic about starting a business. But when you were wrapping up in the UK, had it actually become evident to both of you that there was such a huge gap between the understanding and proficiencies of procurement in the UK versus South Africa? Was it really such a massive gap?
It felt that way based purely on any information we could gather over the internet, over email, talking to ex-colleagues. We were looking at ways of in which we could come back, and we're looking for information, and there was nothing there.
Wow.
There was no assistance, there was no help, there was no insight into the procurement industry in South Africa available.
Goodness me. So that's why you decided to actually return across the pond and bring your knowledge. Well, we are very, very glad you did. Now,
sorry, I'm going to interject there, but before you
it's your
that,
show tonight.
There we go. It's all about me. What was it like emotionally to think about coming back? I know you must have been back to visit family in the interim, and had you been back to South Africa a few times?
We had. We had been often. We were that family that came back once every year at least. But at the time, we had a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Wow.
It was scary. We were giving up my family then and still do live in the UK. And so it was giving up family, it was giving up secure jobs, it was giving up our home to come follow our dream and take our two little ones with us. So it was a very, very scary time, but
so many people also have a lot to say about coming back. You know, it's like, oh, you know, do you know what you're doing? Are you thinking? You get the naysayers. Are you crazy? Are you mad? So it must have been quite an emotional upheaval to think, okay, we are going to do it. So how long between Venice and landing back in South Africa?
3 months.
Goodness. Wow. Okay.
Wow.
I like it. So you didn't think about it for too long. That was it. If you were going to do it, you were going to do it.
Everything fell into place. We owned 2 properties in the UK. They both sold within a month. Everything fell into place. Hank landed his first contract. So we got our first client within that time.
Meant to be.
It was meant to be.
Now, let's just fast forward a little bit. So the Venice holiday is over. You've made the decision to come back to South Africa. You both had jobs, independent jobs. So you weren't literally working cheek to jowl. You now come back to South Africa. You start the PSA group. You move home. You got little ones. And you start working in the same business, cheek to jowl. Wow. And you're still married. Brilliant. There is hope out there. What were the initial experiences when the two of you, with your own way of doing things, meshed into this business and PSA Group began? Hank?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Initially we decided to move to Durban, which probably wasn't the wisest thing in the world, but that's where we moved to. And all my clients were in Johannesburg.
Mm.
So for the first, I'd say 4 or 5 years, I commuted to Johannesburg almost every week for probably 3 or 4 days of that week.
Wow.
Which was very difficult on Debbie and the kids. But it gave us time really to find our own roles within the organization. So I became very much client facing and doing a lot of the consulting work, whereas Debbie started running the finances for the organization and doing a lot of the back office work with regards to the recruitment or getting together the materials that are required to present to clients. So that really allowed us to define those roles and responsibilities. Certainly it wasn't an easy first couple of years. Because there were just the two of us in the business, we were at the point of we were only focused on one client at a time, and that's never a healthy thing for a business. So we got to the point eventually where we had multiple clients, where Debbie and I could really, work on the client relationships in parallel with one another and really feel like we're starting to grow the business.
Well, that's an incredible thing, because it's so important. What happens just with so many entrepreneurs is that they don't ever evolve past that, focusing on the one or two clients, and then they get very staid and they don't look at expansion. Now, Debbie, I know that business development is quite a passion of yours, and I think before I'd like to get back into procurement after the break, but what I'd like to chat to you about first is you have a couple of passions in the business. Now, I know that one of them is around consultants.
Yes.
And we'll talk about consultants after the break. But I'd like to ask you about getting mums, I wouldn't like to say back into the workplace, but back into the mix of doing something, being independent, not just being a mom. Because it's so important, I think, for your sanity first.
Very much so.
Absolute sanity check. Also, financially, you become a little more independent, take the load off. Talk to us around getting women back to work.
Oh, goodness. I think part of that, and also going back to what Hank was saying, is that when you come across a husband and wife team, the assumption is always that the wife is the PA for the business.
Yes.
And the admin support.
All the boring stuff.
All the boring stuff, yes. But I also get a lot asked often when I'm in the, because I manage to do the school pickups as well as the business, and I'm often asked, I want to get back into work, or I need my independence. And I think it's a frustration point for me, because these women are bright. They invariably post-school educated. They are very articulate. They have got incredible business ideas, but they don't have the confidence in themselves. They don't see themselves as having that ability. And anything I can do to drive that and build that, yes, I would. It's something that we need to focus on.
Lovely. So, moms out there, if you want to watch this space, Watch Debbie on Twitter. It is PSA Group, but it's actually at Deborah Van Laar, and that's Deborah with an H. Van Laar. So I know that I can get them to know, because it's so essential to actually realize that having your independence, getting back into the workplace, does not actually mean that you cannot still look after your kids.
Exactly.
Still be part of their lives, but it just means that break between school and afternoon pickups, you can actually be contributing and doing a good thing.
Tantalize your eardrums. Mix 93.8 FM, the home of legendary music.
Toto Africa, and that was specially for Hank. We have Hank and Debbie Van Law in studio from the PSA Group. If you'd like to send us an SMS and ask them some questions, you can SMS us on 41348. SMSs are charged at R1.50, or you can send us a tweet on at Mix938FM. And I do love the tweet in from Cabela saying, power couple on Mix FM. The success show, does this mean that business and pleasure can actually mix? Wow.
Yes, it does, Cabello. And you just keep on reading and studying Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. I know that you have a copy of the book because I brought it to you while you were recovering in hospital after a very nasty taxi accident. And you just keep reading it and studying it because you are nourishing your mind with the information and the knowledge of the greats. And we salute you.
For sure. Now, I want to ask Hank a question just before we get into the procurement side of things. Hank, when you started the business with Debbie, was there an element of safety in knowing that it was in Debbie's hands while you were up in Joburg?
Absolutely, Suzanne. You know, I couldn't think of anybody better in the world that I could rely on to assist to keep the business going, and I can say hand on heart that PSA would not have made it through the first year, the first 2 years, or even the first 5 years had it not been for Debbie constantly thinking ahead like only a woman can do about strategy, branding, finance, all those things that men wouldn't think about until it was too late.
Well, you know what is amazing is in every situation there's polar opposite thinking. So as there's top, so there is bottom, left and right. Now, the interesting thing is in our business relationship, I do everything. Well, and with that, his stocks plummeted.
I just love the way that everybody took you so seriously there. And we've had a lovely tweet in from Audio Evo Zedeh, who've said, you know, Harsha Gowan became an entrepreneur to have more time with the kids, and now she has 12 to look after. So, yes, having employees is also part of the mix, excuse the pun, in becoming an entrepreneur.
And that's actually a lovely tweet from yet again another power couple in business. That's Llewellyn and Harsha of Audio Evolution. We've actually had them on our show, goodness me, probably about 18 months ago when they were talking about their business and their journey. And Harsha has recently been given wonderful exposure on an SABC program called Making Moves, which is all about her business and what she's doing in the world of car sound and fitment, etc., etc. So fantastic. Right, now back onto the topic of couples in business, and we've now squared away the fact that the two of you work together and that you work well together. But now let's bring in the element of procurement and let's really begin to talk nuts and bolts of the business. Now, having been in card and having been responsible for business card related products whilst I was in banking, I did actually, as I say, flirt with the world of procurement. And to describe it would basically be like it's a desert because it's really dry. You know, and it's just, I guess it is not what one would call a massively inspiring field or discipline if one looks at it traditionally. You know, there are other businesses where you'd kind of think, wow, what on earth drew you, Hank, to procurement, and how is it that in this world, and with respect, I call it bone dry. You might say, Chris, well, you're wrong. I think it's absolutely brilliantly fertile. But how have you carved out a new niche for PSA Group, and what is it that PSA Group does?
Thanks, Chris. Yeah. So, first and foremost, I totally disagree with you. I think procurement is the most fertile area. You know, anybody who works with PSA Group, they know we have fun. So that is one of the first differentiators, is that we always have fun within the PSA Group. The second part of your question is what drew us to it in the first place? Well, I think mainly because I knew it was going to be extremely difficult to become a great CA, which is what my parents wanted me to do. And I saw this thing, procurement, and I saw that I could, because it was such a new discipline, I just felt great opportunity to try something new, and I thought I could become great at it.
I like the way he says that, you know. I just didn't envision myself becoming the great CA that my parents wanted me to be. So well done for not trying to follow, doing something that you know you are just going to be really not brilliant at.
So what do you do? What is this world of procurement and how does PSA differentiate itself?
Okay. The first thing really is that we say PSA helps businesses to define or we simplify procurement for business success. And what we really mean there is that there's all this mystery around procurement and what it actually means. But the reality is it's actually very simple. It's all about relationships. So you have to have great relationships with suppliers and you have to have great relationships with your stakeholders. And the stakeholders are the people within the business who you are ultimately serving. One of the things we like to think is that, you know, when you're actually sitting and listening to your to the business and your clients within the business, are you listening to respond or are you listening to understand?
Wow.
And if you're listening to understand, you really get to understand what it is that they require. And if you're able to give them that, then you've taken procurement to the next level.
And so how do you do that? I mean, let's talk nuts and bolts. I mean, you know, what is, do you go in there and go through a whole bunch of cash slips? I mean, I don't understand. Help, help.
All right. So there's a couple of fundamentals. There's two elements of doing within the PSA methodology, around strategic sourcing and commodity management. And then there's the strategy around procurement, which is all about knowing. Now, overarching the doing aspects, you've got the knowing aspect, which is strategy, as I mentioned. And what we like to believe is that if you've got a great strategy, which is aligned with organizational strategy, and that organizational strategy is then linked firmly into the foundation of procurement, then there's alignment, and procurement will be doing the right things for the business. In most organizations, that happens in a silo, and the procurement people think they're doing a great job, but they're not actually doing what the business requires of them.
Well, you put forward three very interesting pillars there, and I just quickly scratched them down on the piece of paper in front of me. The one being strategic sourcing. Now, yes, sounds massively important, but what exactly is strategic sourcing? And given the knowledge that you acquired internationally, where do you see strategic sourcing being done wrong and why, and what should people be doing?
So strategic sourcing really is about execution. It's an approach through which you understand on the one side what the business requirements are, and on the other side you match suppliers who've got the capability to solve those problems or ultimately to provide a service. And that needs to be underpinned by contracts and really good implementation plans. Now, what we find doesn't work particularly well is that the business or the procurement teams don't fully understand what it is that they're sourcing up front. So the more time you spend understanding what works and what doesn't work within the organization and really pinning down what the requirements are so that execution will become better.
Goodness me. And the other two buzzwords, commodity management, again, sounds very, very corporate-y. I mean, what on earth for the layperson is commodity management? And again, given your experience, what have you seen? Where are people doing things wrong? And what is it that they should actually be doing in commodity management? What do you think is best practice?
Thanks, Chris. Great question. So commodity management really is a philosophy in the way that you understand and plan your approach to the way that you're going to manage the expenditure for an organization. So what we typically like to do at PSA is that, first and foremost, we try and summarize all of your expenditure and your behavior patterns and your consumption patterns onto one page. I call it a commodity tree, and underpinning that commodity tree, you've got the number of suppliers you use.
Hank, sorry, I just want to jump in there. Can you actually create a one-pager?
Absolutely.
I mean, this is dealing with even big multinational corporates.
Absolutely.
I'm finished because, you know, this was always the MI, the management information that executives were looking for. And I remember when I was in the bank, it was give me a snapshot. Give me something which will take away all these layers of information and confusion and actually give me a bull's eye, simple, easy to understand snapshot of what's happening. You say you can do that.
Absolutely. It doesn't matter if it's a company that turns over R1 million a year, all the way through to some companies we deal with at R12 billion a year.
And is this unique to PSA?
The one pager with all the underlying information, I believe it's unique to PSA.
Right, well, keep
that's incredible.
Teaching.
And also I liked, Hank, what you said there from turnover of, or is that spend or turnover of R1 million?
Expenditure on third-party suppliers.
Expenditure on third-party suppliers. If I kind of look at a company with around-ish 30% expenses, blah, 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 so kind of like R5 million turnover companies, which by South African terms are considered small business still. So actually procurement is something that small businesses need to look at too. And without it becoming too bogged down, the one pager could suit them too?
Absolutely, Suzanne. You know, specifically in a small business, if they don't understand who they're spending their money with, what the payment terms are with those suppliers, then they're wasting cash flow. Basically, they're leaking opportunities to operate more efficiently from a cash flow perspective.
Wow, that's incredible. And I think that's something that's absolutely essential. So now I know that you and Debbie are going to be putting a book together soon, but I think book number two has got to be procurement for small business.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's a no-brainer because the thing is, how many small business owners would have ever actually given procurement a second thought? I'm actually quite astonished by just some of the information you've shared tonight because I really had the perception, the paradigm that this was big corporates. And you've blown that out the water. So well done. Now, the other buzzword that you were throwing around, and I use it as a buzzword, not in a disrespectful way, but because sometimes it can just be so nebulous and blue sky, and it's almost like, well, we all were the way with the fairies, but that's strategy. So what is it that you and PSA do around strategy?
Thanks, Chris. So around procurement strategy, the first and foremost thing is, we need to build strong relationships with the people that we do business for. And in doing that, we aim to really get to understand what it is that they're looking for. And I mentioned earlier the whole concept of listening to respond versus listening to understand. If you listen to understand, you really get to understand what the strategy of procurement should be within an organization.
Wow. And that's what you do, huh?
Absolutely.
Well, I guess that's why you're consultants, because you get all the parties around and you look for where the big holes are and you begin to plug them. Now, Debbie, I know that you're passionate about developing people. Not only did you answer Suzanne's question earlier around women in a very passionate way around the fact that, well, I just want to get women back to work. I want to get them being productive. I want to get them out of this. I'm just a mommy mindset into the fact that they're contributing people to society. Lovely. Now, let's take the world of procurement. Does the world of procurement actually offer women opportunities? And the other question which I'd like to pose to you is, from what I can understand, the head of procurement is, I think, the most senior role that exists within procurement. I might be wrong. If I am, kick me to touch. Do you think the current heads of procurement, firstly, do you know of any woman? And secondly, do you think the current heads of procurement are shaping themselves and moving in accordance with what you guys were seeing and experiencing internationally?
To answer the question, do we know any women? Definitely. As we at PSA say that procurement's all about relationships, and when it comes down to that, the women are phenomenal at that aspect of it. And so if you look at some of the key financial services, some even in the mining sector, the women are leading that way. So procurement is fantastic as far as that's concerned. We are certainly breaking ground for corporates. But In terms of head of procurement being, we have a little bit of an issue within procurement in that I feel the head of procurement role is a bit of a glass ceiling. Very, very often that role doesn't sit on Exco, it doesn't sit on board level. And we at PSA, we aim to mentor these heads of procurement to get themselves onto that level. So we sit with you one-on-one and we give different insights through our coaching that what we've learned both overseas and here, and to make sure that you are seen at board level and are acknowledged at a board level contributor.
Well, of course, from my side, anything about a glass ceiling has to be smashed through. It's just something that I don't agree with, putting limitations on positions. Now, with procurement being such an important thing, because it is actually in control of all the money that is spent, they might not sign the checks, but they're actually telling you how you should be spending the money. Why is it that it hasn't been a Exco position or a board position? Is it the people in procurement themselves that believe it's just always been done that way, so it's not, that's the way it is? Or is it also that Exco and board level don't think that procurement is that important? Or is it a bit of both?
I think it's a bit of both. There was a statistic that I read last month that said that, because you mentioned a figure of 30% expenditure, it's actually sitting at about 70% now with external suppliers.
Wow.
And so we do need to be a hell of a lot more aware of where our money's going and how it's being spent and what it's been spent on. But I do believe that, unfortunately, procurement people have been pigeonholed to a large degree by ourselves. And so that is one of our missions.
Now, I know that you were saying that as a result of that, people become disgruntled and they kind of leave the sector.
Yes.
So, but they take all their skills with them.
Exactly.
Which leads me to one of the projects that you were sharing with us was around actually developing procurement people to become successful consultants, therefore having their own businesses.
Yes.
And then growing them and mentoring them to be able to start employing people. So what was the thinking around the consultants? Where did that come from?
Part of what PSA offers is a recruitment service.
Right.
And we get approached, I would say, at least once a week by people within the industry who are looking to escape the cubicle as such, escape the corporate thinking and break out onto their own.
Okay.
But they don't know how to. And it comes back down to serving and the whole premise for which we set PSA Group up, which is we want to encourage those businesses to grow. We want to give them the skill set to do so. And so, yes, I'm very excited. We're looking at launching a seminar a series of books and so on in relation to setting up your own consultancy.
Also, because if they do get bored, they'll think they'll go off and open, you know, save some money and open a coffee shop. Taking all that skill with them that they know about the industry, and then also losing all their money because, you know, if you're not a restaurateur or into hospitality and you open a coffee shop, it's probably going to fail. So, yeah, you know, keeping the education and the knowledge and the skill sets within industry is the best way to go. And you're looking at having your first seminar before the end of November, I believe.
Yes.
Dates pending,
yes.
For sure.
Oh, very interesting. Now, as the show is moving towards its last couple of minutes, Debbie, I want you to answer in brief. When you reflect on the last 8 years that you and Hank have been in business together, that the PSA Group has been up and running, what do you think has been the biggest lesson and the greatest aha moment for you around being a couple in business?
I couldn't ask for a better business partner. I couldn't ask for a more trustworthy business partner. I couldn't ask for someone. I have constantly got somebody who's got my back. And that support element is phenomenal. We grow together. We celebrate our successes together. And we felt it's built our relationship. And built our family. You know, I think we were one of the only families to attend the MMI this time last year. We were there with our 10-year-old and our 9-year-old, and I don't know if you were there.
I remember. Yeah. Yes.
And so as a family, what we're teaching our children is just so lovely as well.
Absolutely incredible. And who would have thought that the world of procurement, which most people would have thought of as being very dry and uninteresting, and as Hank so vehemently disagreed with me, he says it's fertile. Who would have thought that it would have brought such an emotion-rich response? Thank you. And Hank, looking back over the many years that you have been in procurement, and you really are in South Africa one of the thought leaders around procurement and strategic sourcing, commodity management, procurement strategy, etc., etc. I'm not just saying that, you are. Where do you see procurement moving? If you were to look into your crystal ball briefly, where do you think procurement is going over the next 5, 6, 7 years?
Yeah, again, a great question, Chris. What I foresee is that the whole philosophy of procurement is going to change. It's going to move more towards serving a great element or bit of research that we did recently was around the impression of increase, which really is all about serving, getting to understand what people are looking for and making sure that you overwhelm them with the service that you provide. That's on the one side. On the other side, I foresee that procurement, which is currently centralized in most organizations, is going to take a turn, and it's going to start focusing specifically on businesses within large corporates, and those individuals are going to almost sit within those organizations. So they're going to be almost become a part of those business units, so that they talk with conviction and real understanding and really being able to serve all the individual businesses, which is very different to what they do today. And that's coming soon.
My word, I'm blown away to actually have someone talking about procurement serving. That's really powerful. Because, and also earlier you mentioned, are you listening to understand or are you listening to respond? The shocking truth is that most people are listening to respond because all they're doing is thinking about their world. And as you said, procurement delivers such a massively important service, and therefore it's such a critically important partner to all parts of business, that the fact that service and the impression of increase is at the forefront of your strategic philosophy, very, very interesting. Very. I certainly hope that there are a couple of CEOs or financial directors or decision makers that are listening to this podcast and are sitting there scratching their heads, and as they do so are asking themselves, well, to what degree is the impression of increase, is serving being inculcated into the way we do procurement? Are we masters at it, or have we not necessarily even entertained the notion of serving? Is it all about us? Are we integrated? And if not, well, goodness me, I think the very first thing you should do is pick up your phone and phone the PSA group.
For sure. It's been lovely. We've had Debbie and Hank van Laar in studio with us tonight, chatting to us about procurement and actually how important it is for small business to start looking at how and when they are spending their money.
Absolutely. And tomorrow we're off to the business center in Broadacres, where we continue forming Against All Odds, which is really a fantastic honor for Suzanne, because she really has faced the wrath of the business world and the universe when everything fell apart, and she was able to hold it together. And well done to you as a couple in business. One thing I can say is I'm immensely proud of the way you've held it together through thick and thin, and it's fantastic to see you now being rewarded and recognized for the fantastic work you have done.
Oh, thank you so much. Now, we'll be podcasting tonight's show. Sorry about last week's show. Unfortunately, we were not in a position to podcast. There was just a problem with the sound quality. But tonight's show will be podcast in the next few days on the Success Show.podbean.com. You've been listening to Chris and Suzanne Styles on the Success Show on Mix 93.8 FM.
Success begins in the 6 inches between your ears. If you want more money, more time, more happiness, and more love in your life, Then, listen to The Success Show with Chris and Suzanne Stiles every Tuesday night at 7:15.